For decades, the patriots of Eastern Europe fought against communism. Despite the threat of imprisonment and near total censorship, they continued to speak out. They called themselves dissidents. Ultimately, they prevailed against tremendous odds. Now, at long last, American patriots are speaking out against the forces that are destroying this country. This program is the voice of those patriots. This is American Dissident Voices. Your host is Kevin Alfred Strong.
Thank you, Richard Cotton. I welcome all of you to American Dissident Voices. In a minute, we're going to have a return visit from our old friend, the liberal social scientist. You know, the one who wanted you to jump into a swimming pool filled with piranhas. But first, I want to let you know again about the new times and frequencies for our shortwave program. Now, the shortwave program is important even to those of you who listen to us on a local AM or FM station. Because if for some reason we have to drop your local station, or if you travel or move to an area where we can't be heard on a local station, you can usually pick up our shortwave broadcasts on inexpensive shortwave radios anywhere in North America and much of the rest of the world. We're still on shortwave, as usual, at 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, Saturdays, on 7355 kilohertz. But be aware that that time slot may occasionally be preempted by sports programming. We can now be heard at two additional times. We're on Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time, which is 9:30 a.m. Pacific Time, and 5:30 p.m. in Britain and Ireland, on 15420 kilohertz. And we're on Saturday nights at 1 a.m. Eastern Time, 10 p.m. Pacific Time, on 7395 kilohertz. Now, I'm sure all of you who were listening to our program entitled Liberalism versus Nationalism a few weeks ago remember our old friend, the liberal social scientist. He's the guy who tried to convince you to jump into a swimming pool filled with piranhas because, in his words, to characterize piranhas as vicious and bloodthirsty is a wicked stereotype. Well, he's back, and he's got another scheme for us on today's program, which I call For the Birds. Now, it seems Mr. Social Scientist has become a bird lover. He's still smarting from the last time you kicked him downstairs, but just to show you that there's no hard feelings, he has decided to invite you to a meeting of an organization he's working with, called the Bird Benevolent Society. Since you've always been a bird lover, and since you foolishly believe that the liberal social scientist has learned a lesson, you agree that you'll go. On the appointed day, you show up at the meeting hall and find several hundred other people, some drawn from the dregs of society by their appearance, but also among them a strong contingent of the empty-headed wealthy, whom you've seen at various charitable and world-improving functions in town. There's the usual collection of homeless advocates, pervert agitators, feed the Africans charity types, and a motley collection of minority activists and Rainbow Coalition idiots. All the conversations in the room stop when our learned humanitarian friend, the liberal social scientist, strides past his international banker and tax-exempt foundation friends up to the podium to address the group. He clears his throat and begins speaking. "Welcome, dear friends and friends of progress," he says, "to this meeting of the Bird Benevolent Society. I know that we are all united in our love for our feathered friends, the birds, and I know that we all yearn to bring them into the coming new millennium of progress and unity and global cooperation and peace. But the birds of this world are being held back by politically incorrect ideas and outmoded traditions that border on fascism. It will be the mission of the Bird Benevolent Society to enlighten the birds and help them to change their ways, assisted by you people of goodwill and, of course, by government grants of taxpayer money and the behind-the-scenes help of my banker and foundation friends here beside me. We look at the world of the birds with dismay and sadness. Everywhere we find disunity, strife, misunderstanding, and conflict. We see the sparrows off in one corner among themselves, eating seeds and singing their songs, while off in another far corner are the eagles, fishing in the sea and singing an altogether different song. Every species and variety of bird seems to have its own place, its own territory, and this leads to conflict among birds. Every species of bird has its own habits and behavior and language, and this leads to misunderstanding among our feathered friends. It leads to further and further separation and isolation among the different types of birds, and we all must, of course, agree that this simply won't do in this our modern age of global unity, peace, and understanding. I call all this separation bird racism. We must conquer these problems. What we will do is this. We will gather all the birds of the world together and teach them a new way of living, all for their own good, of course. The eagle will nest with the sparrow, the chicken with the crows, and the cardinal with the chickadee. By close association, they will eventually come to love and understand each other, aided by our extensive program of re-education, which will replace the old bird racist ways taught to the young birds now by their parents. After a few generations of enforced togetherness, the birds will forget their evil old ways. In fact, they won't even remember that once they were separate species long ago. We will call our bird paradise the United Birds. And then, my friends, and here our liberal social scientists' eyes begin to gleam, we will begin the final phase of our plan, which is really the ultimate solution to all the problems of the birds. We will teach the birds that it is virtuous and desirable for them to choose mates who are not of their own species. Blackbirds will mate with white birds, and red with yellow, and so on and so forth. Our educational programs will teach the birds that it is the worst kind of wickedness and evil to oppose this plan. Of course, we know that this goes against the instincts and the inner feelings of the birds, and so we might have some trouble with it. But within the structure of the United Birds, we will have complete control over all education and information received by the birds. Even their recreational activities will be under our guidance. So, we are confident that in time, our efforts to encourage cross-species mating will be successful, and there will be a new kind of bird in the world. One kind of bird. A one-world bird. A true citizen of the United States, with its mind and behavior molded by our scientific guidance, totally free of the old ways of separation and conflict. A huge wave of applause fills the meeting hall, and the wealthy members of the audience begin to pull out their checkbooks to make donations to the Bird Benevolent Society. But you've sat there politely listening to this nonsense long enough. You leap up onto the dais, grab the microphone, and begin speaking. You people are crazy to give money to this outfit. Bird Benevolent Society, indeed. This organization must be run by people who hate birds, not love them. Different species, different habits and ways are the result of thousands and thousands of years of natural selection. Each is particularly suited to its environment, both in its physical appearance and in its mental makeup and behavior. That's what makes a blue jay not only look different from a cardinal, but act different too. The difference in external appearance is just a sign of the inner difference in genetic makeup, which determines how they act, what they eat, how they choose a mate and build a nest, raise their young, and every other thing they do. If you force them to live together and to give up their different modes of living, you'll just end up causing conflict, violence, confusion, and misery for them, instead of the paradise you're promising. Their natural inborn differences are what make our feathered friends what they are. Can't you see that? Can't you see that you'll be destroying all that by making them all mix together? Can't you see you'll literally be killing them? How dare you try to tear down all that nature has taken millennia to build up? How dare you claim that you are doing this for the good of the birds? How dare you call yourself bird lovers? And let me ask you this question. What the hell good does it do for you to set up this United Birds nonsense? Why can't you just leave the birds alone to live as they always have, just as nature intended? At this point, your old friend, the liberal social scientist, motions to a couple of burly men in dark uniforms who proceed to remove you from the stage and into a back room where you are roughed up enough to keep you quiet for a while. Then the liberal social scientist enters the room and gives you a little lecture. My friend, you have so much to learn and to unlearn here in the New World Order. I can't have you doing foolish things and wrecking our well-laid plans. But you do have drive and energy that we may be able to use someday, once you learn the rules. So I will be happy to explain what we are doing in a bit more detail. Have you caught your breath enough to ask me some questions? Ah, well, I see you're in no condition to speak at the moment. Here's my handkerchief. Wipe that horrid blood away. I hope you've learned your lesson and your place. I think I can anticipate your questions anyway. Look out that window on your left, and you'll see our construction crews putting the finishing touches on our latest building project. You'll see, they're not working in wood or brick, because they're not building a headquarters for the Bird Benevolent Society. No, indeed. They're working in wire mesh, building a great dome. just one of many great wire mesh domes we are building, within which will be the United Birds. We've found that the poor birds don't know what's good for them, and they're constantly trying to find a way to fly away from us. So we're building these new homes for them, where our great social experiment can take place. Oh, it's true, some cages, but we prefer to call them planned housing projects. And of course, there are many birds still outside the domes, living in the old ways. But soon, we will have enough of the United Birds in our peacekeeping forces, trained to attack their fellows who refuse to submit to our beneficent rule. And I can confidently predict that within a few years, the United Birds will encompass all birds. And there will simply be no place to fly to that isn't already under our central administration. Then we can go on to the final stage of our glorious plan. Oh, and I almost forgot your final, rather impertinent question. You wanted to know what we got out of it, what our personal motivation was for this plan for social change among the birds. I seem to recall you even questioned our right to call ourselves bird lovers. Well, we are bird lovers of a kind. We want a world of peaceful birds, just as we said. Peaceful and docile. We want a world of well-educated birds, just as we promised. Educated by us to do what we want them to do. We want a world of birds which has forgotten their own separate and traditional ways, since those old ways might get in the way of our plans and might form the basis of loyalty and cohesion among some birds. We don't want that. We want their loyalty to be only to us, only to the United Birds. And at this point, the liberal social scientist turns to face you directly, with his hooked nose only an inch in front of yours, and he concludes his little lecture. Then, you see, it will be much easier for us to practice our love of birds. We did it all for the love of birds. And as he leers menacingly into your face, you can detect the smell of raw bird flesh on his breath, and you can see on his throbbing lower lip a thick drop of blood in which is suspended a tiny white feather. I have little to add to this fable of the liberal social scientist and the Bird Benevolent Society, except to say that the same kind of people who claim here to be bird lovers also say they're just overflowing with love for you, too. And if you can't see through their nonsense about world government and world law and peacekeeping forces and racial diversity and the democratic community of nations and all the rest of it, then you and your family are nothing but food on the tables of your rulers, and you will deserve exactly what you get.
This is American Dissident Voices, brought to you by National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
Let's leave the fantastic and dangerous dream world of liberalism and look at a real bird species that can give us a bit of nature's wisdom. I'd like to read you a passage from science writer Robert Ardrey's landmark book, The Territorial Imperative. Quote, "No natural hazard which this planet offers can rival those circumstances assaulting the life expectancy of the emperor penguin's young. The emperor breeds only on the ice of the Antarctic continent, and he breeds in winter. When March comes and the southern autumn darkens, the emperor and his wife and his friends conduct their grave march inland, across the ice, to that place where tradition dictates that they must breed. There will be no nest of stones. She will lay her single egg on ice of fathomless depth, and he will pick the egg up on his foot. Then she will go away, back to the sea and their only source of food. He will remain with the egg on his foot. The perpetual night will enclose him. The Antarctic winter will blow, shudder, sigh, snap, crush, torment the present as it has tormented all ages. He will stand with the egg on his foot. He will stand very close among his friends as shoulder to shoulder they preserve their heat. There will be no argument, disputes over property, dominance, borders, prerogatives. On rare occasions, the night will clear to reveal the Southern Cross in cruel arrangement. The Southern Aurora will, in ironic delicacy, see its gentle faraway veils, shifting, impalpable, tantalizing, rewardless. More often, the storm will close down. All will vanish. There will be the wind and the cold beyond calculation. There will be the horror of nature's racket and the horror of nature's silence. There will be the terror of nature's incredible blackness. There will be the terror of nature's soft illumination. And all the time, the emperor penguin and his friends will be standing in a dense, unarguing mass, each with an egg on his foot, while slowly they revolve, presenting to this one the periphery of Antarctic hostility, presenting to that one a respite, a moment of comfort and warmth in the heartland of the social body. For 2 months, this will be their dispensation. Then their wives, fat and hearty, will return from the sea. The males will surrender their eggs, themselves seek the succor of wide open waters, the freedom and the succulence of life. When they return, the chicks will have hatched. Springtime will be on its way, and the sunshine, and that most favorable season for the survival of young. This, after all, was the whole evolutionary point, the reason for the time of winter trial. Brooks too broad for leaping divide us from animal agony. Walls too tall for weeping contain our sympathies. We cannot, with prescience human or divine, apprehend the living moment in a mass of male emperor penguins, revolving each with an egg on his foot in a dark, frozen, endless Antarctic night beneath frigid, withdrawn, uncaring stars. You do not know, nor will you ever. I shall not know, nor shall I ever. Close quote. There is a very deep meaning and an important lesson for us in Robert Ardrey's true story. We too, like the emperor penguins, are the guardians of our genetic heritage, a heritage passed down to us by the successful survival of our ancestors from the beginning of organic life to today. Our genetic heritage is a heritage of intelligence, physical strength and beauty, creativity, and a capacity for an ever-expanding consciousness and understanding of the universe. If at any stage in the hundreds of millions of years of our evolution, our ancestors had failed to keep their blood pure or had failed to secure the survival of the next generation, we would not be here today. It is easy to become absorbed in the many avenues of money-making, pleasure, and distraction available to us in our modern world. It is easy to forget the fact that we too have a responsibility to future generations to pass on our race's genetic heritage undiminished. We, like the emperor penguin, have an egg in our foot. That egg is the future of our race, and everything depends upon our cooperation, solidarity, and determination to protect and defend that genetic future against any who, whether out of malice or stupidity, would destroy it. One of the greatest lessons I ever learned in my life was the lesson taught to me by Dr. William Pierce in his soul-stirring speech entitled, Our Cause. Our cause takes a very long-term view of history and of biology. It will explain in detail and with profound insight, yet in language that any intelligent man or woman can understand, the biological, spiritual, and philosophical basis of our struggle. It is available to you today on cassette tape as our radio offer number 11. To every listener who contributes $12 or more to keep this broadcast on the air, just send as large a donation as you can afford, a minimum of $12, to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
You have been listening to American Dissident Voices,
a beacon of truth for patriotic Americans and for patriots of our Western civilization around the world.
American Dissident Voices depends upon the voluntary support of its listeners to stay on the air.
Please send the largest gift you can afford today.
Send $1 for a book and tape catalog listing over 300 titles that the controlled media don't want you to see.
Our overseas listeners can substitute 2 international reply coupons for the $1. For a gift of $12 or more, you can receive a high-fidelity cassette recording of today's program.
Please give us the call letters of this station, the subject of the program, and today's date.
Write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
And until the next broadcast, this is Richard Cotton reminding you, as always, freedom is not free, free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
This program is pre-recorded and comes to you from the United States of America.